deep in the heart of flyover country, this is Spin Sold Separately.
Big Voice Guy is high on helium. I am high on life, and reality is high on its own supply. Welcome back, everyone, to Spin Sold Separately. I am JD. What a week. What a week. I gotta tell you guys, this result was beyond my wildest expectations. Trump winning the popular vote by give or take 4 million was not on my potential outcome bingo board. I must admit, it was an amazing night for America. It was an amazing night for the truth, for reality. And we are going to get into all of it. I have so much I want to cram in here. I'm going to try to make sure this one does not get away from me and go wildly too long. But oh man, do we have a lot to talk about here. Let's get right to it. Donald Trump is going to be the 47th president of the United States. He wins the Electoral College. I know the AP has not called Arizona or Nevada yet. It's about 90-10 that Trump is going to hold on and win both of those. And if he does, he wins the Electoral College 312 to 226. As I said, he leads the popular vote by over 4 million. The popular vote. He's pushing 51% of the vote. Now, 51-47 doesn't sound like a huge landslide, and it's not. It's an electoral landslide. But Donald Trump had never approached that number, not just in an election, but even in a poll. I never saw a poll that had Trump over 50. I never saw one. It was 48 was about the highest I heard throughout the entire election season. He won all seven battleground states. All seven, assuming Arizona and Nevada hold. He won the entire blue wall of Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania. Nobody, even the most optimistic projection in Trump's favor, nobody saw this coming. And we will get into some very specific huge misses by people that get paid a lot of money to put out polls that people are supposed to believe. Remember I told you the day before the election, or 2 days before, that polling that came out last weekend to basically throw it in your backyard fire pit and watch it burn. I hope you followed my advice, because that's about how useful those polls were. What an embarrassment. God, our media is just the chewed bubblegum on the underside of your school desk. That's the first comparison that came to mind. But anyway, we'll get to that. In addition to Donald Trump's convincing and unmistakable victory in the presidential race, the Republicans also are guaranteed to win the Senate. They currently lead 53 to 45 in races that have been decided. There are still outstanding races in both Arizona and Nevada. Nevada was looking good for the Republicans early on and even into Wednesday, about midday, and then that one kind of turned south. Arizona was not looking good. That's Carrie Lake's race. She just never caught traction, and she was down by about 3 points last time I looked, with about two-thirds of the vote in. I don't see the Republicans taking that seat. Nevada's still up in the air, but let's just assume that both of those go to the Democrats. The Republicans still have a strong and durable 53-47 advantage in the Senate. And don't forget, in the event of a 50-50 tie in any kind of vote, the vice president casts the tie-breaking vote. So having control of the White House and the Senate, even at 53-47, that's a durable lead. They can afford to have three Republicans defect on any given issue and still have Vice President-elect, God, that's cool to say, Vice President-elect J.D. Vance can cast the tie-breaking vote. So again, the Republicans are unlikely to win either one of those outstanding races, but still a very good night in the Senate. As far as the House of Representatives goes, my numbers here are apparently very old. Either that or, I mean, I just looked it up. Either that or the AP is just extremely reluctant to call these races until they are 101% sure. Okay. I mean, if that's the way they want to do it, that's fine. The numbers I have right now, the Republicans lead the decided House races 212 to 199. I heard a number today on a podcast that was both numbers were much higher than that. So it is entirely possible that though a few of these outstanding races that the AP has not called have been called by other outlets, that's entirely possible. But we're going to go on the conservative side here. 212 to 199, the Republicans are leading in a number of those undecided races, which are almost entirely confined to California and Oregon. I gotta tell you, I looked last night, and maybe I'm sure it's probably a little better now. Maybe I'll look it up even as I'm saying this. I looked last night because we were told, even before the election, that it's going to take California several days to count their ballots. I looked last night, they were at 58%. 2 full days after the election, they were at 58% of their vote counted. I'm looking at it right now. Oh, come on, where is it? You can't make this up. What did I just say? 58% last night? We got 59% right now. Honest to God, what are they doing out there? I know it's the most populous state, but for heaven's sake, it's not like we don't know when Election Day is. It's the same day every single year, first Tuesday of November. Wake up, California. As if we needed one more thing to roll our eyes at California about. How about their vote counting? 59% reporting. It was 58 at this time last night. Just embarrassing. Anyway, moving on. The Kamala Harris campaign clearly faltered down the stretch. She underperformed Joe Biden's 2020 numbers in every U.S. county, at least as of election night. I don't know if that has changed at all. Obviously, they're still counting some votes, and apparently California is going to be counting until sometime in 2026. Maybe they'll wrap up in time for the midterms. But I saw a map, and I gotta tell you, it was so funny. I think this was a CNN clip. As I'm sitting there watching Megyn Kelly and her cast of absolute all-stars on election night, I hope you joined that. It was so good. It was so entertaining. Charles C.W. Cook is so brilliant, and he's not a Trump fan. And it was nice to have, she had a couple people there that are definitely not in his camp, and he openly said he didn't vote for him. I don't know who he voted for if he went libertarian. He definitely did not vote for Kamala Harris. But anyway, there was a good mix of opinions there. Yeah, they all leaned right, and they all have mostly conservative takes on things, but it was just so entertaining and so insightful. And just all night long, with they had a results watcher. He had his headset on, and he's on the screen, but he's clearly looking at a screen that is off screen, and he is digesting data as it's coming in. And oh man, was he good. I don't even remember his name. I'll get that name for you guys. But man, he was great. And Maureen Callahan. And there were several other guests throughout the night that kind of popped in and out. Ben Shapiro made an appearance, and but it, oh, I just it was so good. It was so entertaining. I hope you got to watch it. But this one clip, because they kept Megan is very good about showing the hard left's reaction to things, especially when it's disconnected from reality and completely out of control. And there was plenty of that night, and we will get into that in hilarious detail in just a minute here. But there was one CNN clip that they cut to where they actually have a very good election specialist, the guy that goes up to the board and taps the screen and can drill like all the way down to the county level in a couple of taps. The guy CNN has, and shame on me, I should have that name too. He's very good. I actually enjoy watching him, and he had this map up where they were looking at, kind of the overall vote in the country, kind of the basic one that's usually on the screen when they jump to it, and then they kind of they'll tap around and get to whatever data they're looking for. But so Jake Tapper is talking to this guy, and they've got this map up, and this election specialist guy says, "Jake, check this out. Let me show you a map of all the counties where Kamala Harris is outperforming Joe Biden." Jake's like, "Okay, yeah, let's see that." And the election guy brings up a map, and it's blank. It was blank, not one county. Now, again, that might have changed since then, maybe some California counties or something. Or it's possible, she is from California, so there could be, maybe that has changed since then. I hope it doesn't. That look on Jake Tapper's face. I'm still laughing about it right now. It was of utter disbelief. Absolutely, I could not believe what he was looking at. He even remarked like, "Oh," or something like that. It was so good. Oh, but anyway, so she obviously underperformed wildly. She lost ground with every single demographic. You know how much the left loves to break down demographics. White, wealthy women was the only demographic that she gained ground in compared to Joe Biden. She lost ground in every single other identifiable demographic. That is breathtaking. She was not a great candidate. We went over all the reasons why. A almost hour-long episode in episode four, talking about Kamala Harris and the DNC platform, and she was not a good candidate. That was on display for the 107 days that she was the nominee and running that campaign for president. It was obvious. And the American people, they rejected her. They rejected her lack of clarity on her policy proposals. They rejected her reluctance to take on difficult interviews. They rejected her unwillingness to participate in the number one podcast in the country that would have reached probably no fewer than 30 million people. The American people said, no, that's not going to get it done. You need to have more than just abortion and Donald Trump is bad. And the American people made their voices heard. She gave her concession speech the next day. She left her supporters completely hanging on election night, which I thought was very tacky. It got to be very late in the night, and I don't remember if it was before or after the actual election had been called. It was probably a little bit before, but the writing was on the wall. And one of her campaign surrogates came out and said, "The vice president will not be speaking tonight. She will speak tomorrow." And I don't like that. Win or lose, or looks like you're losing, those people in that room, they worked really hard for her. That room isn't filled with a random group of people that were just in town and, hey, Kamala Harris, victory or concession speech, come on in. Those are all, big time campaign people and big time donors, people that put a lot of their time and money into trying to get her elected and to not even make an appearance. I mean, if you're not, I get it. You're not going to win. You're down in the dumps. You're not feeling up to it. I understand that, but at least make an appearance. Go out there, let them cheer for you and say, you know what? It doesn't look good, but we're going to hold out hope. We're not going to keep you here all night. Everybody go home. Let's meet back here, tomorrow at noon or something like that. And to not make an appearance at all, I thought was, I didn't like it. I thought it lacked a certain level of class. But when she did get around to giving that concession speech, the next day, kind of mid-afternoon, even though the race was called late Tuesday night, very, very early Wednesday morning, I thought it was decent. I mean, she hit all the major points she needed to hit. She stressed the acceptance of the results, which I will give full credit for that. I made my feelings about the 2020 election and January 6th inescapably clear. You know what? The Democrats own this one. They said right from the beginning that this needs to be accepted. The Obamas said that. Joe Biden said that. Kamala Harris said that. Now, it's a little easier to accept when the results are as conclusive as they were in the 2024 election as compared to 2020. But I don't, that's a small caveat. Full credit to the Democrats, the top level, to Harris, to Biden, to the top level people I've heard speak on it said, we will accept it. Peaceful transfer of power. Kamala Harris herself is going to have to certify the electoral vote count to actually pass the torch. And I thought that part of her speech was very good. I feel bad for the human. She has a lot of policies and a lot of opinions that I wholeheartedly 100% am opposed to, but just on a human level. I mean, to get that close and, you know, to kind of fell in her lap, and she was on an accelerated schedule, so to speak. You know, like I said, the primary elections usually last well over a year, and then you get into the general. I mean, it's almost 2 years. Not quite 2 years, but it's a good year and a half by the time a presidential campaign is done. Now, she didn't run the full gauntlet, but you know, I feel on a human level, I feel bad for the quote unquote loser. She, I thought, was gracious in the speech, and even though I disagree with just about every policy she put forth, it's a hard thing to do. It's a hard thing to do to get up in front of a bunch of people that spent a lot of money and time trying to get you elected, and it didn't work. But so I thought she did fine. I do not feel the least bit bad for the party or the machine that she was fronting for, and we will get into that in a little more detail here in a minute. Like I said, the legacy media reaction has been nothing short of jaw-dropping. It's so predictably untethered to anything remotely resembling reality. The hyperbole, oh God. You can cut it with a knife. It is so impossible to comprehend how these people will go on major network television and behave like children. I can't believe my. I know I've seen it over and over again. This shouldn't surprise me anymore. It shouldn't surprise any of us anymore. But every time I turn it on, or every clip I see on my X feed, I just want to say, are you serious? Do you really believe this? Or something. Sometimes I have a feeling like it's all just an act. Are they actors? You know, like D-list actors that couldn't get onto, you know, even as extras on TV shows, so they go to legacy media political talk shows. It feels so acted out. I could understand it better if their completely uncontrolled rants had any basis in reality or fact. They spun people up into such hate-filled frenzies. And we will get into some very specific examples of that too, because the behavior of some people, more people than I would have thought. I guess when I said towards the end of the last episode that these are good people, you know, these are some people I love, and I know people that I know are going to vote straight down the Democrat ticket, and that these are good people and they're smart and we love them. That may have been too broad of a statement. I have seen some reprehensible behavior from people that I thought I knew and that I thought I had a stronger relationship with than it turns out that I did. And you know, we'll get into that, but I try not to blame the individual, even though it's the individual that's going online and saying, if you voted for Trump, you're dead to me. Don't talk to me. Don't call me. Don't text me. Don't at me. You're morally disgusting and you voted for a rapist. We'll get into that. It's troubling. The degree to which people are disconnected 100% from what is real, yet so convinced that what they have been told to believe is real. I mean, what's true is false, and what's false is true in some of these people's worlds. And it's sad. It is sad to watch people so wholly consumed by propaganda and by manipulation, by millionaires sitting behind a desk telling them how they should feel about their own daughters, their own fathers. It's demonic. Disgusting doesn't cover it. It's of the devil. MSNBC, in their typical form, takes the gold medal for complete irrationality and incomprehensible tantrums. Joe Scarborough, who I have already had to mention and call out by name on this podcast, said, well, Trump voters just clearly skipped civics class. So now it's not enough that we're garbage. And we're stupid and we're weak. Well, apparently, we didn't even bother going to civics class, even though every word out of his mouth shows an embarrassing lack of understanding of American civics. And you know what? I'm a nobody from flyover country. I would pay Super Bowl kind of money to watch Joe Scarborough and all of his cocksuredness sit down across a desk from Megyn Kelly and try to get away with one word of the drivel that he spews out on that show of his, that his viewers just can't help but lap up. And I just want to grab people by the shoulders and say, are you seriously believing this clown? Listen, think about what he's saying. Ask the questions. Does any of what he's saying make any logical sense? Everything with that jerk is class. He feels so superior to everyone that dares carry an opinion that is not 100% congruent with his. And you know what I want to tell his viewers that give him so much credit, that think he understands them? He makes $8 million a year to sit behind that desk and break up families. $25 million net worth for that guy to sit there and end lifelong friendships because he's somehow convinced people that he is the one to believe, not your own brother or your own mother or your own cousin. He has replaced family for a lot of his viewers, and they're paying him $8 million a year to do it. Well, I really hope he attends your Thanksgiving dinner and your Christmas morning celebration and your New Year's Eve party. I'm sure he'll be there. I'm sure Joe Scarborough stays up at night thinking about the families that he has permanently destroyed with his lies, his rage, his hate, and his utter disconnection from reality. I would take him on point by point. He'd never give me the time of day because I'm not in his class. But this is a challenge to you, Joe Scarborough. I will pay any amount of money I can afford in my small, tiny, barely funded bank account because of this economy to watch you try to get away with one word of what you spew to your viewers, to Megyn Kelly. Let's make it happen. Seriously. Megan would absolutely clear her schedule for you to come and challenge her head-to-head on the issues and what's real and what's not. And there is no surer sign out there of a pathetic-ass coward than somebody who will sit behind that comfy little desk and spew all these lies, but will never face a single challenger from the other side because he knows the truth is not on his side. Why do you think there's never one reputable opposing opinion on that show? Why? Ask yourself. A lot of understanding the world as we know it right now can be answered by just asking yourself the question. Why does he never bring on a competent Republican to spar with? Because he knows the truth is not on his side. And boy, is it easier to argue when the truth is on your side. Joe Scarborough and all others like him are pathetic, feckless cowards that are on a daily basis breaking up families, ending relationships among people that he will never meet. And to everyone out there who's posting all this moral superiority on their Instagram, on their X feeds, on their Facebook, you know who doesn't give a rat's ass about how many relationships you are losing and ending because of politics? Joe frickin' Scarborough. Keith frickin' Olbermann. You think these people give one rat's ass about your destroyed relationships? No. They're laughing all the way to the bank on your broken relationships. I hope you think about that when you look around your Thanksgiving table at the end of the month here and half the seats are empty. Because you made it that way. Because Joe Scarborough told you to. I hope you're proud. Joy Reid. All night long. And this was another one that Megan kept cutting to because she's so unglued. White women betrayed Kamala. She everything is race with this woman. Absolutely everything. Whether it's election season or not. Everything is race with this woman. She is an all-time race baiter. Talks about nothing but oppression and white supremacy, all while sitting behind a desk making $1.5 million a year to do a one-hour show. Does that sound like oppression to you? Her vile hatred for the country that has made her rich beyond her wildest dreams is really something to behold. the very system that has made her among the highest paid. I'm not going to use the word journalist. She's a talking head. Has made her one of the highest paid talking heads in the country. She hates it. She despises this country from its roots to the very crest of its branches. Apparently there's big money in being a race baiter. Somebody who just goes on and complains about white people every night. How reprehensible and soulless we are. Apparently there's big money in that. And now I'll pass the baton to David Axelrod. You know, the guy that basically got Obama elected. At least, well, Obama got himself elected. But David Axelrod had a lot to do with it. Said that there was, quote, obvious sexism and misogyny at work here. Based on what evidence, David? This is another one of my favorite tools of the left, to just lay out a blatant opinion as indisputable fact and back it up with absolutely nothing. What evidence do you have, David Axelrod, that it was nothing but sexism and misogyny at work here? Did it ever occur to you that Kamala Harris was a crap candidate? Did it ever occur to you that she was dropped into the laps of the electorate with less than 4 months before the election, with zero votes cast? Do you think that might have had something to do with it? No, I know. It's so much easier to dismiss everyone that voted against her as sexist or misogynist. Because you know what? If everyone that voted against her is sexist and misogynist, then you don't have to look inward. You don't have to maybe examine your own party's platform and say, you know what, maybe we went a little too far allowing obvious men to compete against biological women in sports. Maybe we shouldn't have green-lighted a boxer in the flippin' Olympics beating the crap out of women for 2 straight weeks while the entire world watched and cheered him on in the interest of inclusion. You might want to look inward, David. Zero evidence to support that claim. And there's another guy. His net worth, $18 million. Real connected to the real, you know, the real struggles of middle America, David, aren't you? How about Al Sharpton? Ooh, one of my all-time favorites here, Al Sharpton. Said that the Black and Latino communities are laced with misogyny. And that's why they didn't vote for Kamala in the same numbers that they voted for Joe Biden. This guy is an all-timer, all-time grifter. You want to know how much he makes a year? To spew that kind of racist nonsense? $1.5 million. Think of that as you're driving to your 9-to-5 while he sits on his $8 million net worth. How about Jimmy Kimmel? What happened to late-night comedy? Oh, Johnny Carson? What we wouldn't give to have Johnny Carson not just back and doing what he did so well, but just to hear his take on the degree to which late night comedy has descended into the murkiest cesspool that it currently finds itself in. He started crying on his own show, went on a good 2-minute run of which groups should be sad today or tonight, and he covered all of them. And finish it up by saying, well, you know what, Trump voters? You should be sad too. You're just too dumb to know it. His show is on ABC. You know, the same network that did that totally not biased Trump-Harris debate? Yeah, that ABC. You know what they're paying him? $15 million a year. Do you think he gets middle America? Do you think he gets the struggles that the average American family is experiencing right now? But he has no problem going on his late-night show and lecturing the hell out of us about it, while he goes back to his $50 million net worth. Are you picking up on a theme here? Political satire used to be fun, because, let's face it, I don't care what side you're on, political satire is a target-rich environment, and it's extremely rich when you haven't chosen a side. Or at least you're not afraid to call your own side out for its ridiculousness. Because they can both be ridiculous. And it's funny. How rich was the Kamala Harris campaign as far as just being able to make light fun of it on a late night talk show like SNL or Jimmy Kimmel? Or there was so much material there, he wouldn't touch it. He has cast off half the country, and apparently he and ABC are completely okay with that. Apparently they're completely okay with half the ratings that they'd otherwise be getting. I could go on and on. Are you sick of being lectured by multimillionaires yet? Are you sick of it? Because I sure as hell am. So what does this all mean? This 51-47 Donald Trump victory. Did you hear that, Jimmy? Yeah, the majority of the people, not just the electors in the Electoral College that you hate so much. The majority of Americans voted against your preferred candidate. Handle it like a grown-ass adult. This was a full-on rejection of the current version of the Democrat Party. This was a rejection of the demonization of your opposition. How long did we have to suffer through Nazis, Hitler, uneducated, garbage? Your message got through, I'll tell you that. It got through in huge numbers, and it motivated people to vote against it. I guarantee that them turning the hatred heat up that last week, I am 100% convinced that got at least 0.5% of those people that might have been willing to sit it out because they didn't really like either candidate. I guarantee at least 1% of the people that voted for Donald Trump, at least 1%, did it because they're sick of being insulted and they're sick of being lectured and they're sick of being accused of holding beliefs in their hearts that they do not hold. That election on Tuesday was the death of identity politics. This endless obsession with race, gender, orientation, this group, that group. Well, you look like this, so you must believe that. This was a full-on rejection of all of that. People didn't vote against Kamala Harris because she's black or because she's a woman. She was a bad candidate that could not explain her own policy positions with any level of clarity. This election was the death of DEI. Hiring or admitting someone to a college based on nothing but immutable characteristics. This toxic belief that any difference in outcome must be attributed to some form of discrimination. The fact that all of corporate America, and even in smaller towns and smaller companies, were forced to sit through struggle sessions for white people. That they weren't even aware of their own racism, but it was unavoidable. Struggle sessions for white people that were guilty of absolutely nothing. They were forced to sit and atone for their inherent racism, sexism, and bigotry under the guise of diversity and equity and inclusion. I will never apologize for something I didn't do or for positions I have never taken and never held. My prayer is that this cancer has been cured, and we need to keep it that way. This election was the death of the trans youth agenda, the boys and girls sports, taking away their trophies, their awards, and their scholarships. The Title IX changes that were going into effect that were allowing boys and girls locker rooms from K through college. That's what was coming our way, and this election put a full-on stop to it. There will be none of that in the upcoming administration. We can build a separate space for people that are not comfortable in any one locker room. That's fine. We can build a separate space for that. Boys in girls' locker rooms was insane from the start, and thank God this election said absolutely not. This election is the death of polling. Ann Seltzer, who is apparently one of the most admired pollsters over the last couple of decades. I don't know anything about her, but that's what I understand. I have no reason to doubt it. You remember those two Iowa polls that I shared with you right in front of the election that I told you to completely ignore? She was the one that had Harris +3 the day before the election. Trump won Iowa by 16 points. Think about that. That is a 19-point miss. You're throwing darts. What did I say about what Rush said? That polls in their most sadistic form are meant to shape public opinion, not reflect it? Unless you were intentionally trying to oversample progressive Democrats, there is no way you could take 100 random people in the state of Iowa and come up with Harris plus 3 when the end result was Trump plus 16. It's just blatant dishonesty. That poll had no basis in reality, yet she put it out there and people actually bought it. There wasn't one poll out there that showed any indication that Trump was capable of carrying every battleground state. He swept them. There was not one poll that indicated that that was even possible. These pollsters, I don't know who pays them, but holy moly, do they need to take a long, hard look at how they're conducting polls in the 21st century. It probably, you know, could it have something to do with, you know, a lot of people that don't answer phone calls or... Because I certainly don't. Most people don't answer calls from numbers they don't recognize. Maybe the answer is, you know, email or text. I'm not a pollster, so I don't know, but what an absolute embarrassment. This election was the brutal death of celebrity endorsements, meaning anything at all. Let me just give you a quick rundown of some notable names that threw their support full-throatedly behind Kamala Harris. Oprah, Taylor Swift, Beyonce, Cardi B, Leonardo DiCaprio, Usher, Julia Roberts, Harrison Ford, Richard Gere, Queen Latifah, Jimmy Kimmel, Stephen Colbert, Robert De Niro, Elton John, Ben Affleck, Jennifer Lopez, Mark Cuban, though he did issue a very nice congratulatory message on X the night of the election. Well done, Mark Cuban. Barack Obama, Michelle Obama, every host on every legacy network save for Fox, every person on The View, every columnist at the New York Times, every columnist at the Washington Post, every actor or actress on Saturday Night Live. The people on that list have a combined net worth of over $10 billion. I ask again, are you sick of being lectured by millionaires yet? It seems like a lot of Americans that make $38,000 a year are. This election was the death of wokeism, where everything in life can be explained through the prism of oppressor and oppressed, where every white person carries around racial hate in their hearts, whether they're aware of it or not, where whites are bad, where men are bad, where masculinity in its most primitive form is bad. A happy marriage means that you're weak and a slave to the patriarchy. Success must mean that you took something. Failure must mean that you're owed something. That boys can be girls and girls can be boys and gender is fluid and the difference in sexes doesn't really exist. And this culture of punishing success while rewarding victimhood. That the straight white male is guilty of all historical wrongs. You know, I'm having a really hard time figuring out how this didn't catch on with the majority of Americans. And last but certainly not least, this election is the death knell for the legacy media. Their open lies, their purposeful deceit, their endless insults and smears, not just of the candidates, but of the voters. A superiority complex of cataclysmic proportions. No sense at all of what it's like to be in the middle of the country or in an average American family. No sense at all of what it's like to struggle every week and wonder which bill you're going to put off paying so that you can make sure you make that mortgage payment at 8% on time. Which car is not going to get paid for this month? Which utility bill are you going to let double up and hope that you can work some overtime between now and next month to pay it off? So they don't shut your heat off in November. How about this X account? I don't know who this person is, but apparently she has some clout on the left. Her name is Emma Vigeland? V-I-G-E-L-A-N-D. My sincerest apologies if I did not pronounce that correctly. She is some left-wing propagandist that calls herself an expert. Do you want to hear about the electoral prediction that she put out? She predicted that Harris would sweep the swing states and win Iowa and win the Electoral College 325 to 213. Does that sound like somebody who has any idea what she's talking about? That prediction was perfectly wrong. Like, you couldn't have tried to miss it by more because you couldn't have missed it by more. But these are considered serious people on the left. These aren't news people. They're paid operatives. They're bought and paid for by the billionaire Democrat donors that funded the Harris campaign to the tune of over $1 billion. $1 billion, and that campaign ended the campaign season in the red. They spent over $1 billion on this campaign. The party that says we got to get big money out of politics, spare me. These people do not have the best interest of the country in mind. How in the world do you put a map like that out there and call yourself a serious commentator on this subject? Unbelievable. There is clearly no willingness on the part of the legacy media to look inward at all. The blame game going on out there is absolutely fierce. Most of them are dismissing it as we're just an irreparably racist, sexist country. Period. End of story. You know what? Go with that. Go with that. Preach it to the masses, because you will not win another national election with that mentality. You want to go with things like racist and sexist country and we're not ready for a black female president and toxic masculinity and white rage and white supremacy and uneducated idiots and a Trump cult, that you gave the voters too much credit. They don't even understand democracy. Keep going with this. Because you know what's going to happen in the next presidential election? You're going to lose New Hampshire, New Jersey, and Illinois. Go look at the numbers. Go look at the numbers. Kamala Harris won them. Look at the trend lines. That doesn't convince you? Okay, do it again. You know what's going to happen in the next election? You're going to lose New Mexico, Colorado, and Oregon. Keep going. You're going to lose a lot of elections if you're going to continue to blame the American public instead of looking inward and taking stock of the degree of deception that you have subjected the American people to. You've lied to us for too damn long. We're on to you. You are legacy media. X, Substack, podcasts like this one. We are the new mainstream. And legacy media, you have done every last bit of this to yourself. And the legacy media deserves to die a slow death and fade into history like the COVID pandemic. This was a double-barreled middle finger to the legacy media and the Democrat establishment in Washington. You know, I hope you guys have fun dealing with a much wiser and much more organized Trump administration this time. Good luck. At the behest of this legacy media, a lot of relationships have been damaged. Some even ended. It's all over the internet. Have you seen these completely psychotic screaming videos? Can we unnormalize posting your own emotional breakdowns? When the hell did that become a thing? Honest to God, people setting up a camera, making sure it's nice and sturdy, backing up 5 steps, and on cue, screaming into the void. This isn't somebody that is, you know, having a mental breakdown that somebody else happened to catch on their phone and therefore it goes viral. No, these people are doing it on cue on their own phones and posting it themselves. What are you trying to accomplish? This feigned moral superiority. Oh my goodness, it's unbelievable. I want to share something with you guys. Because there's a debate going on out there right now as to who are the good people here. Because both sides are claiming the high ground. Well, they can't both be right. But I would like to read you something that I came across. You saw that little E when you downloaded this episode? That E is for expletive, which I have been very careful not to use. That is not something that interests me in this format. Yes, I am full on sailor mouth in most of my day-to-day life. I try not to do that on here. I don't, unless you're really, really good at it, I don't think it's very effective in this medium, unless you really, really know what you're doing with it. The reason you saw that E is because I am going to read verbatim a brief text exchange that happened between two people in my life that cared about each other. That's as far as I'm going to go with it. I don't have the whole thing here. It kind of starts in a rather cut-off place here between a couple of messages. This is the person defending their vote of Donald Trump, and then the respondent is the one attacking them for said vote. This is the person defending because they're being attacked. This person did not invite this fight. This is the person defending. All I want to be able to do is afford a place to live and the ability to live without a financial chokehold in the future. We have different opinions, and that's okay. I in no way voted with the intention of racism or homophobia. You know for a fact that I love you, and it's hurtful that you would think otherwise. Respondent. This is sad. Was lying about it necessary? He's a rapist. He's a, all caps, rapist. Defender. I never told anyone who I was voting for because it's none of their business. I never lied about it. No one needs to be telling me who I can and can't vote for. Attacker. You voted for a rapist. Defender. I voted for financial freedom. Attacker. I'm not safe in this country. My people are being shot in the streets, and you voted for him. All caps. Is not important when every minority is dead. Kamala was gonna give money to first-time home buyers. Are you on birth control? Because kiss that goodbye. Defender. Kamala wouldn't stop crime from happening. Unfortunately, as much as I hate it and it breaks my heart, that kind of stuff is going to happen. This person misspelled Kamala. To which the attacker responds with the same incorrect spelling. Kamala? Defender. Abortion and birth control are on the state level, not the federal level. Attacker. That's his fucking plan to make it federal. You just fucking voted in a felon. Crime is happening in the White House. A felon sitting pretty in that goddamn chair. Defender. You need to understand that I made my choice with no bad intentions. There's things on both sides I heavily disagree with and agree with. I'd really appreciate if we stopped talking about this. Let that sink in for a minute. That wasn't some random exchange, and that wasn't even the whole thing. That was just the part of it that I got because somebody thought I'd be interested in it. That wasn't a random exchange via X with somebody, two people that didn't know each other. Those were two people that cared about each other, that spent a lot of time together, that know each other. I'm going to ask again. Who are the good people again? Is that a good person? You make the call. Forget the fact that there wasn't one true statement in that entire expletive-laced rant. I guess the felon part is true, but do they really want to hear the story about how they contorted the law and somehow connected it to federal campaign finance law to make it a felony and then took one act and found 34 different ways to make it count? Do they really want to hear that? Do they really want to hear the truth, or do they just want the argument? I mean, the answer is obvious. Folks, that's psychotic. That's psychotic. And that's not the only one of those out there. They're everywhere. And they are coming universally from one side. And the legacy media is again 100% at fault. Because who is putting those thoughts in these people's head? I hope you guys don't wonder why I put the legacy media one notch above Satan on my list of favorite things. I said that these were good people. I said that these people mean well and we love them, and I would never ask for this fight. But if somebody comes at you with that and gives you the lecture and tells you that you are the moral inferiority, you guys do what you want. I don't want these people in my life, at least for now. They made this choice. I would never. I said this before. Check the tapes. I said I would never, ever end a relationship with a friend or family because of politics. But if somebody comes at me with that, I don't need this kind of unhinged behavior around me. It's too destabilizing. It's too radical. It's too illogical. Make them come back to you. I know it's happening. I've had coworkers that I thought I knew for 20 years come in Wednesday morning, almost unconsolable, unconsolably unhinged. And again, spewing all the same provable lies, provable falsehoods. And despite my sincerest efforts to assure them that, look, you're worried about things that aren't true. Forget the fact that they're not going to happen. They're not even true. There's no talking sense to them. They're so convinced by these demonic powers out there, convincing them, stealing their free will from them with these purposeful falsehoods. It's even worse than I thought. So remember when I said that these aren't bad people? That attacker in that message I read? That's a bad person. The people that go on your Facebook post where all you said was, "Congratulations, Mr. President," or "Make America Great Again," or something innocuous like that, and they jump down your throat to lecture you about how vile a human being you are, not allowing you the grace to make your own decisions for your own reasons, not even wanting to talk about it. Maybe they are bad people. Maybe I was giving them too much credit. I'd like to read one more thing for you here. This is a little something I came up with because I do give people the benefit of the doubt. I do think that people can rise above politics when it comes to what I considered strong relationships. Obviously, I was wrong. So I just want to read you something real quick that I came up with in response to this new way of thinking. To all the people posting their moral indignation and cutting off friends and family because of an election, I don't want you in my life. It's clear our relationship was never as strong as I thought it was. I have no interest in relationships that are this superficial, with a set of undeclared rules I must follow so as to have the privilege of not being kicked out of your life. If me having the nerve to take in all available information around me, use my life experiences and my free will to come to a decision on who I vote for somehow triggers you, the problem is you, not me. I don't envy the life that you are seeking, a monolithic line of thinking that leaves no room for nuance, no room for individual thought or experience, or heaven forbid, things that might be more important to someone else than they are to you. I may disagree with you. I may think you're misguided or basing your most cherished beliefs on a set of falsehoods. But I would have loved you all the same. What does this all mean going forward? As I said, Kamala Harris and the Democrats, to their full credit, have assured a peaceful transfer of power. And again, Kamala will be presiding over the count of the votes. That is the job of the vice president. And good on them. I mean, I'm being serious when I say that. Let's see if the members of their caucus hold up their end of the bargain. I'm not going to hold my breath, but I hope they surprise me. Now, this degree of defeat, I think, makes it easier to handle. I think it makes it more palatable. There's really nothing to fight about, it's not close enough to challenge. I hope they do the right thing. So far, they're off up to a good start. Good on the Democrats for starting off the way they have. The Trump transition team is already in full swing. Susie Wiles, who was Donald Trump's campaign manager, Donald Trump has already named her as his chief of staff, which is a very, very prestigious position in the White House. If you ever watched The West Wing, and I know it was a left-leaning show, I loved it. I've watched the whole series through like 7 times. Leo, if you remember Leo from that show, he was the chief of staff, closest advisor to the president. You'll be surprised to know that the raging misogynist that is Donald Trump just nominated the first female chief of staff in American history. You know, for a misogynist, he's pretty bad at it. In addition to the Marvel team, I love that name, by the way, of Tulsi, Elon, RFKJ, JD Vance, some other names I've heard floated around for possible cabinet positions. Senator Tom Cotton, who I love. I heard his name thrown around, and this is nothing official. You know, it's just kind of banter online. You know, don't assign it any credibility. It's just what I'm hearing. Senator Tom Cotton's name was thrown around as a possible Secretary of Defense. Senator Marco Rubio, possibly as a Secretary of State. Not sure how I feel about that. I would love Rubio to have a role. I don't know if state is the right one, but I'm no expert. More names will certainly be coming out in the near future. This Trump administration will be far more organized than they were the first time. I think they know what to expect. I think they know what kind of people to surround themselves with. They need to be laser focused on keeping promises, cleaning up the bureaucracy, closing the southern border. Now, Trump did that very early on in his first administration with a series of executive orders. And he could do that again if the Republicans are able to hang on to the House with any kind of, you know, even a 4 or 5 vote majority. They need to get meaningful legislation done to reform our immigration system once and for all. This is just one of those issues that keeps getting kicked down the road, and we keep dealing with illegal immigration, and oh, it's because our immigration system is broken. If the Republicans can hold the House, this is a golden opportunity, and I would hope that they would make this one of their top 3 priorities to get done very, very early in the next legislative session. They're going to have, if they hold the House, they'll have the Senate and the White House. Let's get some meaningful and permanent immigration reform done. News travels fast, I'll tell you. It's on the foreign affairs front. There's already been progress in the Middle East. Hamas has already shown a renewed interest in signing a peace deal. No more than 12 hours after Trump was named the winner. Somehow I don't think that's coincidental. And they need to work towards an off-ramp in Ukraine. That war needs to end. And people on the left need to understand when you're dealing with a Vladimir Putin, the rules are different. We will get into this more in the future. Maybe we'll do an episode on it because it's a difficult situation to understand. There's far more to it than meets the eye. But for the purposes of this discussion, I'm already well beyond where I wanted to be time-wise. Thank you for sticking with me here. Long story short, Vladimir Putin cannot appear to have lost this war. He knows it. Because if he goes back to his generals and that power structure in Russia as a loser, he's done. And I don't mean out of office. I mean, he will likely be killed. That's what's on the line for him. So the people that think we just have to see this through until Ukraine wins, okay, you want Vladimir Putin out, you're going to get someone twice as bad. That's how it works over there. So complicated situation. We'll tackle that more in the future. We need to get back to our energy independence, open up those pipelines, get the offshore drilling going again, all the fracking that we can do in an environmentally friendly way, bring down the energy costs. And everyone that took Econ 101 knows that when you bring down the cost of energy, the cost of everything comes down because everything requires some form of energy to be produced. You lower the price of energy, you're going to lower the price of everything. Got to get it done. other priorities to kind of handle down the line, I think those are the ones that need to be hit right away. But other priorities down the line, lowering taxes, veterans reform, get Tulsi on that. I don't think there's anybody better to handle it. Modernize and strengthen the military. Cut spending. Turn Elon Musk loose on that government bureaucracy that is so overstuffed with nonsense. Megyn Kelly made a good point today. I'm not rooting for a bunch of people to lose their jobs. We need to create some kind of a soft landing place where the government bureaucracy that is going to get cut down, that is not even something to debate about. It will get cut down under this second Trump administration. We need to create a soft landing spot for people that are no longer going to have positions in the federal government. I don't just want to go in there with a buzzsaw and just lay off a bunch of people that now have no means of an income. That's not what I'm rooting for. I'm rooting for a gutted federal bureaucracy, but a soft landing place for the people affected, and to give them a springboard towards whatever will come next. And let's get RFKJ going on making America healthy again. Are you sick of hurting all the time? Being sick all the time? If you wonder why that muscle ache just won't go away? You know, part of it might be age, but part of it might be the endless stream of toxins that we are putting into our systems, our kids' systems, the school lunches. I am excited to see what RFKJ can do on this front. I don't know a ton about it, but when you listen to him talk, he obviously knows what he's talking about. He's incredibly smart, incredibly well-researched, knows everything about everything. When you listen to him talk, he's a captivating speaker. Again, he has a lot of far-left beliefs that I am not on board with, but this one, cleaning up our food and water, go for it, 100%. So, I'll try to wrap up here pretty quick. I just want to give you my thoughts as if I haven't made my thoughts clear yet. That's what I have in my notes, my thoughts. I am so happy that this Marvel team won. Think about this for a second. Imagine what would have happened with a fair media. In the face of these trials, the impeachments, the endless character assassination, I mean, you know what Trump has dealt with, and you know how unfair this legacy media treated him in the debates, in his interviews, how much they openly favored Kamala. What if the media treatment had just been fair across the board? He won 51-47 in the face of all of that. If our media had any sense of actually serving the people, could this have been a 60-40? I mean, do you think one more out of 10 people could have been convinced to vote for Donald Trump if the media were simply fair? It would just take one out of 10. I think that's reasonable. I think in a sane world, Donald Trump wins this election 61-37. I don't think that's impossible to wrap your brain around. To get 51% of the vote in the face of the otherworldly resistance to him and the bold-faced lies told about him every minute of every hour for the last 8 years, the fact he got 51% of the vote is unbelievable in the face of all that. He got outspent. I think it was like 3-1. I mean, he was no, like I said, the Harris campaign spent over $1 billion. I don't know exactly what Trump's number was. It wasn't anywhere near that. I'm so happy that we rejected this culture of lies. I am so disgusted by the online reactions and the legacy media reactions. But I do want to give credit. I am encouraged by the reactions of Kamala Harris, the Obamas, even though I did not like their behavior at all, fully participating in the lie fest leading up to the election. And I thought Mark Cuban coming out the night of the election, I don't even know if it had been called yet. Maybe it was right after they called Pennsylvania and the writing was on the wall. But Mark Cuban came out and named Donald Trump by name on X, said, "Congratulations, Donald Trump. You won it fair and square." And then he congratulated Elon Musk, too. Well done, Mark Cuban. Seriously, that was big. And you know what? That's what we need. This isn't us versus them. This is wanting the best for the country. Mark Cuban is a brilliant guy. Politics are cuckoo town, but he's a brilliant guy. We want people like that involved in public service and trying to do better by the country and trying to bring people together and find good solutions to difficult problems. That's a good thing. But we have to take advantage of this. The voters sent a message. They green-lighted the Trump agenda. Can we control all three? The House, the Senate, and the White House? If they do, they have to get it done. They have to get it done, and we need to hold them accountable. We can't get to September or October of next year with nothing getting done. If you live in a district like I do with a Republican congressman, or if you have a Republican senator, stay on them. Make sure we're getting things done while we have this window to improve the country. But the unhinged reactions, all the they're all lies. Every single person I see losing their mind on the internet spouts any one of a dozen provable lies. No one's taking away your right to anything. Nobody lost any rights. Calm down. Nobody lost any rights. I saw a video of just some random woman, younger, attractive woman, probably 30. And she did one of these videos where, people are just sitting in their car kind of thinking about life. And she said, "What rights did you lose? You can still, and of course, whenever the left says rights, that's code for abortion. Nothing is going to change on abortion, okay? It is a state issue. Trump has said repeatedly it was a state issue. He said at the debate that it's a state issue. It is a state issue, according to the Supreme Court, that he largely helped put in place. I think I did misspeak on one of my earlier episodes where I said the Dobbs decision came down in the Trump during the Trump administration. It did not. It came down during the Biden administration. My bad on that one. But no legal immigrant's going to get deported. Who comes up with this stuff? It's so made up, it's so hysterical, and it's so untrue, and it's breaking up relationships. And again, I could understand it a lot better if any of it were true. But none of it is. People are throwing away lifelong relationships over lies, over distortions, over politics, even whether it's true or not. I pray that your relationships in your life are deeper than that. I really hope they are. Like I said, you think any of these legacy media millionaires gives, well, the explicit's already out there. Do you think they give two shits that you're sitting at home not talking to your own family? No. No. He's probably enjoying a cocktail right now on the Jersey Shore while you sit at home alone, disowning your own family members and cutting off your friends. It's sad. I mean, that doesn't even capture it, but that's the word I have right now. It's sad. And the Democrats are going to lose a lot of elections. If they refuse to look inward and self-examine and they just keep blaming Americans and blaming the voters and demonizing and insulting half the country, I'm curious to see how many election cycles it's going to take for them to figure it out. They're too radical. I'll help you out, Democrats. You're too radical. You are not where the American voting public is. Trump and the right have the advantage on almost every issue. And he's taken a neutral stance on two of your favorites, abortion and entitlements. You have to moderate. Trump going neutral on abortion and entitlements, which he did. He's not touching either one. Okay? I know you Democrats don't believe that, but I hope you. I'm keeping the receipts, okay? In 4 years, when none of this stuff that you are clamoring about and freaking out about, when none of that stuff happens, I'm keeping the receipts. And I'm anxious for all the apology pieces that come out in 2027 as this administration is winding down and we fire up for the next presidential campaign. I look forward to all the apology pieces and all these legacy media outlets saying that, you know what, we freaked out about like 95 things and like none of them happened. Well, we got that wrong. Again, I'm not going to hold my breath. So yes, taking that neutral stance on a couple of issues that are difficult for the right, it was brilliant. It was a brilliant move, and it helped him get elected. But now Donald Trump has to deliver. We have to hold him and this administration to account. Our expectations are high. We gave you the tools you need. If we hold the house, we gave you everything you need. Our expectations are high and we expect results. Now, as far as the future of this podcast, I promised I would not be all political, and I'm absolutely going to keep that promise. But now that the election is over, we're gonna broaden out a bit. You know, we'll still be talking about things like this for a little while, and maybe we'll go kind of back and forth on topics, and you know, we'll do some deep dives, like I said, about the Electoral College and things in politics that are wildly misunderstood, and you know, just the overall genius of our federalist system of government. How our forefathers were so ahead of their time, it's hard to comprehend. But we'll talk about any news that comes up, you know, as names are released as to who is going to be nominated for cabinet positions and things like that. We'll talk about it. But we're going to do some deep dives on some of the things we've talked about: the filibuster, guns, the income gap, healthcare. I get to go a little lefty on you on a couple of those things. Hope you're ready. Oh, we'll have some fun. Maybe we can get into a couple of little spar sessions too. I got to keep you guessing. I can't be super predictable. That's no fun. We're going to do some discussions. We're going to do some interviews. A good friend of mine gave me some light reading to catch up on. And when I say light, I mean like 8 full-sized books. And I am a notoriously slow reader, so I got to get to it. But we'll do some book reviews. I mean, I can't wait. We're going to have so much fun. We're going to branch out. We're going to grow. We got big ideas ahead, and I hope that you stick with us for all of it. I hope you enjoy it. I hope you share it. I hope we can grow this thing together and make it something that we can all participate in. As I get more comfortable with this, we're going to get more ways to interact with each other and do kind of Q&As and get some back and forth going, because you know, you don't want to just sit here and listen to me opine all day. I mean, I sure wouldn't if I were you, but we're going to wrap it here. Thank you for sticking with me for this enormously long episode, but obviously we had a lot to cover. So pumped about the election. So pumped about the direction the country has voted to go. The mandate is there. I know 5147 doesn't sound like a mandate, but 312 to 226, that's a mandate. The vast majority of states in this country have given the green light to the Trump agenda. We got to get it done. I'm excited. I am not excited about the number of relationships that have ended so unnecessarily this week. I'm hoping that's just the immediate aftermath. And I pray that most of these get fixed, because that's a hell of a way to end a lifelong relationship because you don't like the outcome of an election or because somebody voted different than you. Be better than that. Anyway, thank you again. This has been Spin Sold Separately. I am JD. Don't be a jerk. Backing in is the only correct way to park. And I'll talk to you next time.